Welcome to the podcast of Focus 580, featuring interviews with newsmakers and experts on international affairs and daily life, hosted by David Inge at WILL Radio, Urbana, Illinois. Please support this service by becoming a member and visit us on the web at will.uiuc.edu.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we are glad to have you listening. Our guest here in studio with us this morning is Dr. Robert Bojack. He's a pediatrician. He's also clinical assistant professor at the University of Illinois, and for a long time has been here, stopping by on a regular basis once a month, almost on a Thursday, to talk about children's health. And a long time ago, we decided that probably this would be one of those things that people who would be listening would always have questions about, and it would be good to have this regular show dedicated to the subject. So whatever might happen to be on your mind, as long as it has to do with kids and children's health, give us a call, and I know the doctor will do his best to help you out. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's the number. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So give us a call if you have a question. Welcome back.
Good morning. It's good to be back. Thank you.
Your suggestion here for something for us to start out talking about, at least, is some new guidelines, some new dietary guidelines for children that have been put out now by the American Heart Association. And certainly if people have access to the internet and they would like to read about this in greater detail, you can go to the website of the American Heart Association, which is www.americanheart.org, and I'm sure that you can get great depth and detail on that. Basically, you want to talk a little bit about basically what it is they're saying, and is there something here that's different than what we had been saying before?
No. No. Yeah, I was a bit disappointed. I thought there'd be the Ten Commandments of Nutrition and put it all in. Yeah. And make it easy for us, and it doesn't. It talks about calories, you know, for year of age, how many calories you should have, and you say, okay, but how do I help you folks out there? You don't know a calorie from, yeah, you don't know how much you're eating. Yeah. But basically, I think what it says is, all right, forget the calories. Let the child decide what they're eating. Don't fill their plate for them and expect them to clean it. That's the way I was raised because my parents were Depression era parents and, you know, you didn't waste food. And, yeah, let them decide what they eat. Offer them a good diet. And I think a good diet is, yeah, the red meats are minimized or come down. The fats are come down or the fats are selected. Like, I think thinking about this and summarizing it, anything that's hard and solid in the refrigerator, you probably don't want as a fat, you probably don't want to eat, which includes butter because it's an animal fat, would include lard. It would include margarine because it's high in trans fats. The spreadable margarines, the ones you can get out of the refrigerator and spread right on your, you don't need to toast the bread. You can spread it on plain white bread, are safer. We don't eat enough fish. Yeah, which fish aren't safe or which fish are higher in mercury and pregnant women and young children shouldn't eat. Swordfish, tuna fish, shark, and a kite fish was in this article. If anybody knows what that fish is,
the other ones I could tell you what they are, but this one
I didn't go on the internet. And, yeah. More yellow vegetables, more green vegetables, less white vegetables. And the other interesting thing about this article is the vegetable most consumed by school-age children is the white vegetable, the potato. And it's usually fried. Yeah. And we don't know what kind. Yeah, you go to a fast food restaurant, and what kind of oil did they fry it in? Is it, yeah, saturated or unsaturated? And I think it talks about starting your day with a breakfast and preferably not fried eggs, fried in butter with hash browns fried in who knows what kind of fat. But breakfast is, and there's been lots of research on breakfast that it seems to sate you for the day. You're less likely to snack if you start with breakfast, and breakfast is generally a good source of whole grains. Now do select your breakfast cereal. My bias is if it makes my milk look a funny color, I don't want to eat it. And generally, if it makes my milk look a funny color, it's been pre-sweetened and it's not whole grains. So I think, again, breakfast companies, cereal companies are proud because it's a sales point to put we are a heart healthy whole grain thing or cereal. Use a whole grain bread. So increase your whole grains, increase your fiber, skin your chicken to remove the fat that way. Drink more milk. It gets calcium in. It gets vitamin D in. It's important source of calcium and vitamin D. And drink 2% or skim milk. Watch your juices. I used to love cran apple juice till I read the label one day. It's got cranberry juice in it. That's good. It's got apple juice in it. That's not bad. It's got other juice in it. You say, what other juice in it? And it's got high fructose corn syrup in it. So it's high fructose corn syrup. What's the benefit of it? Well, fructose is sweeter than sucrose, our usual table sugars, so you can use a little bit less and you get more sweetness and you save calories that way. But you still say, this isn't cran apple juice. This is some kind of fruit drink. So watch your, yeah, watch your juices, especially and for children. And as we get into older kids, we get into soft drinks that are, yeah, what this hospital talk or what this paper talks about is non-nutritive calories. They have calories in them. That's about it. And I think the other thing we need to remember is save electricity, increase your activities, turn off TV, turn off the computer, turn off the Game Boy, get out with your kids and play, kick your kids out of the house to play. And the other thing it talks about is the family meal together, where mom and dad are eating with the kids. Everybody's eating the same thing. You are not running a restaurant. You will cook a good meal. You will have grains in it. You'll have vegetables in it, green and yellow vegetables instead of French fries in it. Your meat will be fish. We will eat more fish. We will skin our chicken. We will cut down on our red meat intake.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's really this point about the sugar, I think is really interesting, or at least this recommendation to watch out for the fruit juice because it can have a lot of sugar in it.
Yeah.
And I wonder, particularly because now there's concern about children, particularly in adolescence, with weight problems and that being tied to diabetes, whether, you know, there is this, maybe we have some concerns now. We ought to be thinking more about consumption of sugar for children. Now, you know, there's sugar in their sugar. I mean, there's sugar in an apple. But it's kind of the way it's packaged is different than in, say, a Snickers, you know, and your body will take up that sugar in a different sort of way. So and one is definitely better than the other.
Yeah.
So it seems that maybe that concern, this does address that concern about really concentrated, quickly absorbed sugars, and that maybe that's something that you really ought to be limiting.
Yeah. We want to avoid obesity because obesity is linked with diabetes, and we know that diabetes is bad for the blood vessels. It causes heart disease and stroke and kidney failure and all that sort of stuff. Obesity is directly related to hypertension. Fat intake seems to be directly related to atherosclerosis and heart disease and stroke and that sort of thing. And, you know, okay, this paper, and I won't say that this is the fountain of youth. It will keep you young and beautiful forever. And yeah, we've heard about the studies in the postmenopausal women that it doesn't, they still get heart attacks. They still have strokes. You know, I think we can't fight genetics. Our genes are dictating something to us. And a good diet, whether you eat 5,000 pounds of broccoli in your lifetime or 50 pounds of broccoli in your lifetime, probably won't change your longevity, but may make you a little bit healthier, and we can only do the best we can.
Yeah. One other thing, I remember this being an issue maybe some years back, that there was some concern that maybe there were some people who had gotten this message about limiting fat, about how being on a lower-fat diet was good, and that they were feeding their babies a very low-fat diet, and that that's not good, that for particularly development in infancy, you need to have a certain amount of fat. And then later on, then you can think about trimming down the fat. Can you talk about particularly about infants and fat intake and what's recommended?
Yes, I think what's happening is, I think in the first year of life, we don't want to limit fat activity. I think one of the advantages of fat is it's calorie dense. There's 9 grams, or there's 9 calories per gram of fat. There's only four or five calories per gram of protein and carbohydrate. Protein and carbohydrate are the same calories. So it's important for these calories to go in. It's certain fats are essential. Many fats our body will make. Certain fats are essential, so they need to be in the diet. This paper also talks about breastfeeding, the benefits of breastfeeding. But yeah, I think we don't want to restrict children's fat, certainly in the first year of life. And I think, again, in the average American diet, we probably don't have to. Yeah, restriction of fat probably isn't. And I think these studies, the study about postmenopausal women, it is very hard to get down to the recommended fat intake, which I think is 7% or something like that. Yeah. Very few make it.
Yeah. I think that, that was, indeed, it was one of the points about that particular thing was that some people, when they said, well, there was no difference in the reduced, you can take the reduced fat group compared to the other group, the question was, well, were they reducing it enough? And they made that very point that it's really difficult to get your fat down to that level.
And I think, the other thing about fat is we need a certain amount of fat in our diet because fat delays gastric emptying. We feel more satisfied with fat in our diet. So let's keep the fat healthy. We still need fat in our diet, but we do need to. Yeah, we do need fat in our diet.
Our guest here in this part of Focus 580 is Dr. Robert Bocek. He is a pediatrician, and he is on this program once a month, always on a Thursday, and we talk about children's health. We just started out talking here a little bit about nutrition and diet issues, but if you have other kinds of questions, you can certainly call in. Anything you could imagine talking about with a pediatrician, you can do here on the show. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I expect that probably a lot of people, unless they're really concerned about their weight, they're trying to lose weight, they're trying to be more healthy, they have something like diabetes, are probably not very conscious of how many calories they're consuming every day. They don't. Some people count them and need to. Probably most everybody else does not. And one of the recommendations is for the kids not to give them more calories than they need. So then I wonder, well, do parents really need to be much more conscious of their of the calorie intake, of how many calories their kids are getting?
Yeah, but there's a real problem there. Do you know how many? Yeah.
I mean, do I know how many I get?
No. I haven't the foggiest.
No.
So I think what the answer is, what foods are available in the house? Are Snicker bars available in the house? Are potato chips available in the house? What's in your refrigerator as far as soft drinks? And I think we can, if apples and oranges and carrot sticks are available for snacks instead of Snickers, we can control what's in the house and the caloric density of food that's available in the house. And once they get to be teenagers and have some expendable cash, then we're less in control. But hopefully by then, if we program these kids into this, this is what I've lived on all my life, this is what tastes good to me, that vending machine doesn't tempt me. The stop at the fast food restaurant doesn't tempt me, or I'll have a salad there. And I think we've certainly seen the fast food restaurants come a long ways. And now you can get, salads at most restaurants. And you can get vegetarian at most fast food restaurants. And you can get vegetarian foods at a lot of fast food restaurants.
Yeah. Do you think that it is true that in terms of what people eat and how they eat, and particularly what they like, what tastes good to them, what their preferences are, really are set really early? Really early?
This article implies that maybe they're programmed in utero during pregnancy, that mothers need to,
that what mom is eating somehow
triggers, But in this article, it's a real may, and I think there's a lot of mays, and I think there's a lot of stuff we don't know. But I certainly think that I'm not sure we can program it in utero. That one I'm a little dubious about, but I sure think we can program it in childhood. Except Brussels sprout. I hate Brussels sprouts.
Oh, see, now, folks, do not start calling about the Brussels sprouts. Yes, we've on some of our shows, we've had conversations about the Brussels sprouts. I'm not real fond of them myself, but, you know, that's okay.
Yeah.
Have broccoli.
Yeah.
Have green beans.
Yes.
You know, have something else. There's plenty of good stuff to eat.
But, yeah, I think if we control, you know, the nutritional content of food or the calories with nutrition versus the calories that just make us fat. Mm-hmm. And let's not forget, when I was in medical school, my professor of physiology said that weight is very, it's a very simple equation. It's calories in plus calories out. In kids, it's a little funnier. It's calories, yeah, it's... The kid needs calories for their to cover their activities, what they burn. Kids are also growing, so they need to put some calories in bricks and mortar, if you will. In adults, it's much simpler. It's calories in versus calories out. And I think we count calories. There's all kinds of diets out there to count calories. How much do they emphasize burning calories, losing calories by shooting baskets with your kids, by playing tennis with your kids, by going for walks in the evening and lose. Yeah, you can eat more if you burn more calories.
Yeah. Well, I think we have a caller here to talk with, line number one, right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I wondered if you could say something about poison ivy and children. It seems to be a cumulative poison of some description. Some children seem to be very allergic to it. Some can sit in the middle of it and not even be affected by it. But some of us who take field trips are tremendously aware that it's a problem that we don't know too much about. And I thought you might have some information on that.
Okay. You are exactly right. I happen to be one of those people that could roll in poison ivy, although I'm not sure I'd try it. About 40% of the population is not cannot be sensitized to poison ivy. 60% of the population, depending on, will have a terrible problem with it. It is an allergy. It is not an IgE-mediated allergy. It's a cellular-based allergy, so you don't have to worry about anaphylaxis and respiratory problems and asthma.
You
got and that
a few
sort of
words
stuff.
There I don't understand.
Okay, yeah. Basically, it's a skin rash. It's a very itchy skin rash. It runs its course in about 10 to 14 days. Steroids, either topical or if it's bad enough, systemic steroids, oral steroids, something you swallow, will help it out. It's still going to run its course in 10 to 14 days, but we can modify it. But you're absolutely right. Some people are very sensitive.
It seems like some people can pick it up a quarter of a mile away from it.
Yeah, and obviously that's not true. You do have to come in contact with the resin, but there are so-called fomites. Your dog may have rolled into poison ivy and brought it in on their fur. Somebody may have brought it in on their clothing, and then you touched their clothing and got the resin on your hands that way. So, in fact, one of the messiest ones I saw was when I was in the Navy. These kids, and poison ivy's hard to recognize, you know, leaves of three and that sort of stuff, but it's not quite that simple.
It has different forms.
It has different forms. It can be a ground cover. It can be a vine. It can be almost tree-like, and it can be hard to recognize. And in the winter with no leaves, it's very hard to recognize. And these kids went on a Boy Scout camp out, and they burned poison ivy into campfire.
Oh, I see cleanup people doing that.
Yeah, and Monday morning I had about five or six kids in the office with their faces just kind of bright red and rashed out. And
it gets in the lungs. Can you say something about its cumulative nature? It seems like it can get into your system, and older people are more allergic because they've accumulated some in their body.
No, probably that's not true. But yeah, the first time we get it, it's going to take. Yeah, the first time we come in contact with poison ivy, probably nothing's going to happen because our body has to be sensitized to it. The lymphocytes have to be keyed up. The second time we get it, we'll get it. It'll happen in about a week or so. The third time we get it, will break out in 3 days. So, the reaction comes a little faster each time within limits.
Uh-huh.
It's itchy. It's uncomfortable. It can get secondarily infected. Probably staph or strep usually turn into impetigo because you've got it under your fingernails and it itches and you scratch it.
So what is your treatment for it? Do you dry it with alcohol or do you use Calamine lotion? What do you recommend?
Probably what you really want to do is you want to use an anti-inflammatory. So one of the over-the-counter steroids, hydrocortisones, the Cortades, and that will help out if it's not too bad. If it's worse than that, if you have large areas of it, I'd seek medical attention and get put on a oral steroid like prednisone. You know, if you have too much rash, there's too many spots to rub it on. Go to the physician and get some prednisone, which again will make you much more comfortable.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Helpful.
All right, thank you. Other questions here are welcome. We're talking about children's health. This is something that we do once a month on the program, always on a Thursday, with our guest, Dr. Robert Bocek. He's pediatrician, clinical assistant professor at the University of Illinois. And the phone lines are open, so whatever's on your mind can be just about anything you imagine talking about with a pediatrician. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455.
I took an ecology course when I was an undergrad, and we went on a field trip every Saturday,
mm-hmm.
and every Monday half the class came in with their hands all bandaged up because they had poison ivy.
Well, I was just, and I'm not sure, I guess it was just not all that long ago, I started thinking about it because having been out and working in the yard and trying to do things like pull up weeds and stuff, maybe this was last summer, it might have even been back in the earlier part of the spring, sort of got clued to the idea that it could be there and you could almost not notice it. Because it's not only does it come in all these different forms, but depending on what time of the year it is, it's going to be different.
Yeah.
So that you could actually come in contact with it and not even know it or not be conscious of the fact that if you were in a big patch where there was a lot of weeds and stuff and you were just in there ripping everything up that you could grab, that you could do that. So probably the best thing that you could do is, other than trying to make sure you know what it looks like, is to wear gloves. Don't let your bare skin come in contact with the plant material. Just to be on the safe side. Let's talk with somebody else. Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi. Speaking of poison ivy, each spring I regularly go garlic must. My annual garlic mustard murder rampage at the family farm in Ohio, along creek beds and under bushes and stuff, and I always run into poison ivy. So I've taken to putting on that you can buy a lotion called Ivy Block,
mm-hmm.
which you put on your skin before you're going to be heading into poison ivy territory. And I found a pair of gardening gloves from Little's Good Gloves on the internet that are long gauntlet gloves, so they come way up my arms. But the Ivy Block I find to be very helpful. I put that on my face and things where I can't manage to cover up with clothing. And I think that might help with kids, too. And you can also get something called Ivy Dry, which helps dry it up or helps soothe it. But the other thing that somebody has suggested is that when you come in, that you bathe your exposed parts in bleach water. And bleach does zap organic carbon-based compounds. So I don't remember to do that, but it's an interesting thought. So those are my thoughts about it. I don't know what you do about pets, but there you go.
Yeah, I think pets. If you want to bathe your pet every time they've been outside, but probably you don't. Probably your pet you probably just don't want to do that. I'm not aware of bleach water. I'm not aware of bleach water being a specific antidote or a solvent for the resins. So I think just washing, I suppose a little bleach probably won't hurt anything. And it's certainly not very toxic. But certainly washing the resin off
fast as possible. Let's thank you for the call. Let's go to line number two. This is Champagne. Hello.
Hi, I wanted to talk about my daughter. She is 6 years old, and 7 months ago came off of a 3-year prescription called Bactrim Pediatrics.
Mm-hmm.
She had her urethras weren't contracting correctly, and now that she's in school, it's really hard for me to watch how much water intake she gets, and seems to be not having as many, not going to the bathroom as often, and wondering if that's going to overall affect all of this medication that we took for this problem.
I presume she had ureteral reflux.
Correct.
Okay. Ureteral reflux. Okay. We have the kidney. The ureter is the tube that comes down from the kidney to the bladder, and then the urethra is the tube that comes from the bladder out. And some kids have ureteral reflux. It's supposed to be a one-way street. Urine made at the kidney is supposed to come down the ureters to the bladder, out the urethra to the outside, and it's supposed to be a one-way street. It's never supposed to go back up the other way. And if it does, there's probably bacteria in our bladder at all times, so if it goes up the other way, then the bacteria in the bladder get up the ureter.
Right.
Ureters to the kidney, and they get kidney infection, and that's not good. And
right.
I presume they've stopped the Bactrim.
After 3 years.
Yeah, because I presume she no longer has ureteral reflux.
They did the sonogram and the catheterization.
Yeah.
And then concluded that we were going to go off of it for 3 months and have a urinary test monthly, which she cleared. But now that she's in school, she's not having, her urine is very, it's very strong.
Yeah.
When we first started, it was calculating how many times she went to the bathroom.
That's right.
We were up to 7-9 times, including the evening. Now we're down to like 3 and 4.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, is that going to,
No. She'll probably be okay.
Okay.
But yes, you're getting into another. Girls don't like to go to the bathroom in school.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't, no matter what age. And you talk to many girls who, from the minute they leave school to the minute they get home, have never used the bathroom facilities. They've held it.
Mm-hmm.
And we like to discourage that. I don't know what we're going to do about it. We don't think that's a good idea because, maybe it leads to bladder infections and maybe it causes pressure back up. But I don't know what to do about it. And I think the best you can do is make sure that she has a good glass of juice or water.
Right. I pack
with
an
breakfast
extra water
and,
with her lunch. Things that contain water, like apples and oranges.
Yeah. And then flutter when she gets home.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the best you can do.
She'll just grow out of this little cycle too then. It is not because we're off the medication and that this is a backwards act to me.
No, kids don't like to go to the bathroom in school.
That's very interesting. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call.
And especially girls don't like to use the facilities at school.
Now, I think I know there has been some concern about just generally people of all ages not drinking enough water.
Yeah.
And then sort of after that came out, then there was a little bit of a backtrack on that and saying, you need to consider all sources of water, not just liquid water in a glass. I think still there was some concern that probably most people were underhydrated. Maybe that's a different issue.
Now, and then there have been some articles about overhydration, particularly in runners, especially in the runners that aren't the fastest because they don't stop to drink. They get done with the race and then they go drink. But it's these other runners that are a little bit slower that stop at every water stop and they get overhydrated and there's been some problems with that. But I think a glass of juice is water. This cup of coffee I'm sipping on is water. It has some flavoring, but basically it's water. Milk is not water. Milk is steak. It's in a liquid form, but milk is not a good water source. But about anything else runny is water.
Yeah.
And I think they have changed their minds that you don't need 8 glasses of water a day. You need 4 glasses a day plus a couple cups of coffee.
Although, again, there's if part of that is a sweetened drink of some kind, then that's maybe not so good either.
Yeah, but a glass of soda is water.
That's also water, but
there's
a whole
lot
bunch
of calories in there.
Yeah, all right. Let's talk with somebody in Champaign. This is line three.
Good morning. Yeah. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the pros and cons of soy-based infant formula versus the regular stuff.
Yeah. Most infant formulas are cow milk based, and they've sort of taken the cow's milk apart and they've taken things out and they put things in and they've tried to make it as close to human breast milk as possible. Some kids are intolerant of cow's milk. They're allergic to it, and they are placed on soy formula. Probably a milk allergy, cow's milk allergy is very, very rare, and we probably have way more kids on soy formula than they need to be on soy formula. But soy formula, kids do seem to, infants do seem to grow well on soy formula.
Mm-hmm. And that's the only advantage, is to avoid the allergy?
But there's a problem there, because 15% of the people who are, something like 15% of the people who are allergic to cow's milk protein are also allergic to soy protein, so it may not do it. The other thing is the sugars are different. Lactose is the sugar in all mammalian milk, and soy formula has a different protein. So the kids who are lactose intolerant will also respond well to soy milk.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, thank you. And we will go again to another caller, and this would be Champaign in line one.
Hi. Hi. I've got a question about sleepwalking. I have an adolescent stepson. He's just 14, and he's been sleepwalking for, say, the last 2 or 3 years, and he's only been in my household for about that amount of time, and his mother says she's never really witnessed that in him before, and I'm wondering if this is something I ought to be seeing a doctor about, or if it's pretty typical for kids to kind of go through phases and it's something that might just go away, or...
Yeah. We don't regard somnambulism, sleepwalking, as a pathologic condition, basically. They usually do outgrow it, quote unquote. The only problem is, where does he sleepwalk to?
He tends to go from his bedroom to the dining room or living room, the areas where, particularly, you know, we see it because we'll be up late.
Yeah,
maybe watching TV or something, and you know, he gets up a lot earlier than we do, and he goes to bed earlier.
Yeah,
he's very active. And he can be very tired, you know, and so we want to make sure he gets to bed. Sometimes he'll resist and wants to stay up all night, and I think I notice it when he tries to force himself to stay up that he'll have a sleepwalking incident. But he tends to just kind of come out and sort of look at us or like try to talk to us, and then he turns around and goes back to bed.
Yeah. So that's okay. Yeah. Sometimes we have a problem with the sleepwalker walking out the front door.
Yeah, I'm worried about that. We don't. Right now, we feel like we can't let him visit his friends for overnight parties, you know, like pajama parties or whatever, where they play video games all night or something. I mean, I'm worried that he'll be in somebody's house and do that. You know, he'll walk out or go somewhere, and camping as well. You know, he's in Boy Scouts, and I was worried that they'd be camping somewhere and he would just disappear, you know.
Yeah, and I think you have to kind of alert the adult chaperone about that.
I think that would freak them out, probably.
It may. The fortunate thing is, as I recall, I can't remember exactly what sleep, I think this is done in a very, very deep sleep when they tend to sleepwalk. And when they tend to be away from home in a strange environment, the bedwetters don't tend to wet the bed. The sleepwalkers don't tend to walk because they don't quite get to that sleep level.
I see.
But I won't put that in writing. But generally, it tends to be a safer time.
Yeah. But so this is the kind of thing that is typical for adolescent age, and they grow out of it, you're saying? I mean,
we can see it at any age. We can see it in young children, too.
Huh. And so when he becomes an adult, he might still be dealing with this?
He may, although it tends to usually last for a few months or years, and it, several months, and then it goes away again.
Okay.
Sometimes what you could do, you might try and keep them up an hour later or something like that. Let them stay up a little later. Sometimes you can change their sleep clock that way.
Yeah.
So it doesn't trigger.
I see. Like, you're thinking that it triggers because of a certain hour of the day? Or
yes. Yeah, because the sleep cycle, they hit that sleep phase at a predictable time. So sometimes you can wake them up as you go to bed. Or maybe rouse, and you don't even have to don't wake him, but just kind of arouse him.
Yeah.
Just before he gets into a sleepwalking cycle, and it may just kind of change his internal clock around so he won't do it.
Yeah, we could try that. Because it does seem like it's always around a certain time period. And that period is, I always figured it was just because that's when I'm still awake. I'm still up and around in the house, and that's why I see him do it. But I always wondered if, what's going on at 3 a.m, or 4 a.m. But I can't say I'll get up to go to the bathroom or something, and I won't, run into him.
Yeah. So. Some people we advise to put another lock on the door.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a deadbolt that's operated with a key on both sides.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to be the problem in your case, but with some, the people who are wandering out, you have to do some funny things to keep them safe.
Certainly, my wife saw a show on TV on National Geographic of people doing scary things when they're sleepwalking, and now she wants a lock on her door.
Yeah. I don't.
He's not eating, He doesn't get up and make himself a sandwich while he's asleep. I'm a little worried that could happen, but for the most part, he just seems startled, and yet, you can just see by looking at him, this kid is not awake.
Yeah, they tend to do automatic things rather than intentional, thought out kind of things.
Yeah, yeah. So.
They just come out and then they go back into bed.
I try to talk to him a little and say, what's going on? Do you need something? And, he'll say something incoherent. And like you said, then that's when he'll turn around. I don't try to grab him and wake him up or anything,
Yeah, you just kind of steer him back to bed again.
Yeah.
We tend to lump it in with the night terrors and, the sleepwalking, the somnambulisms, we tend to lump it with the night terrors and those sorts of things. And we tend to say they're benign.
Yeah. All right. So
they don't. Yeah.
We'll just monitor it.
All right. Okay.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you.
We have about 15 minutes left, a little bit less than that, actually, maybe more like about 10, in this part of Focus 580 with Dr. Robert Bocek. He's a pediatrician, and he's on the program once a month. It's always a Thursday. We talk about children's health, and it's wide open, as I said here at several points. Anything you might think about talking about with a pediatrician, you can talk about that with the doctor. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455.
Isn't it wonderful that kids outgrow,
of parents think that, yes, it is wonderful that a lot of this stuff, this too shall pass. Your great motto, that a lot of stuff like that may be worrying at certain points does resolve itself, does go away. I mean, it doesn't mean that everything worrying will do that, but some of the things, I think we're getting another caller here ready to go. So rather than launch into some kind of question here, we will go to them. And in fact, we do. Champagne, line number one. Hello.
Hi. I have an 8-year-old son who's very bright and precocious and a joy in my life.
Good.
I do worry, though, and I have been meaning to talk to his pediatrician about this. He seems to have trouble focusing in school, focusing at home, and it's been an ongoing issue since kindergarten. He'll, for instance, just days off in class and not become disruptive, but just is clearly someplace else. And during our routines at home, such as, brushing your teeth, washing your face, putting on lotion, things that we do every morning and every night, oftentimes if my spouse and I are not next to him, serving as a constant reminder, these things just get forgotten. And so I'm wondering how I can determine how much of this is just normal 8-year-old behavior, or at what point should I become concerned? And I'll hang up. Thank you.
Oh, stay on the line, please.
Too late.
Okay. You know, I guess my question is, I need more information. You know, I think what comes to mind is, do talk to your pediatrician. Is he just daydreaming? Or could this be an absence epilepsy, or formerly called petit mal epilepsy, where these kids don't lose consciousness, they don't have much in the way of movements, although if you look at them, they may be staring inappropriately or blinking inappropriately. The problem with these is they can sometimes be so frequent. They only last 3 to 5 seconds. But if you have them 60 times a day, multiply that by 3 to 5 seconds, this kid is out of it enough time that he may be falling behind in school, or it may be a problem. And could that be it? If he's just daydreaming, you know, call him back. I presume that he's doing okay. You said he was very bright. I presume he's doing okay in school. Grades are not a problem, so we're not talking about attention deficit disorder. But I think my major concern or major rule out in the scenario you've given me so far is, could this child be having some kind of convulsive disorder, seizure disorder?
I think we have the caller back.
Good.
So maybe she might like to ask some more questions, or you could ask some questions. Hi.
I am back. I'm sorry. I heard epilepsy and I couldn't pick up the phone quick enough. So I don't know. I honestly don't know.
I guess what I'd look for is how long are these out of it episodes?
It depends. The latest one, he was out of it for about 12 minutes because I was in the shower for that long while he was supposed to be brushing his teeth, washing his face, brushing his hair, putting on lotion. And when I came out of the shower, he was standing in the bathroom, and I said, "What have you been doing?" And he said, "I've been looking in the mirror."
Okay. So he's always got a reason. You know, I think I'd still talk it over with the pediatrician, see if there's anything going on, because 12 minutes strikes me as kind of a long time to be just daydreaming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he may not be telling you what he's thinking about, and that's okay. That's not our business. But, yeah, could this be something else going on? This 12 minutes is a long time for absence epilepsy. These, again, are 3 to 5 second spells.
Okay.
These are very brief spells. And if you watch closely during these episodes, mm-hmm. often you will see something. Rapid blinking, inappropriate blinking, or inappropriate mm-hmm. staring, or just little fine movements. Sometimes you can induce these spells by having them hyperventilate, having them breathe real fast. You can induce these spells, and that's completely safe to do, and we used to do it in the office all the time. Sometimes that'll do it. But I think, you know, I think he's probably just daydreaming. But I do think that there's some other things to think about, and I think this would be worth a talk to the pediatrician.
He also has pretty severe seasonal allergies, and so I've always just kind of associated these spells with allergy medications or him being very stuffy.
Yeah, that may be it.
Okay, that could also be.
Or when his allergies are up, he may not hear very well, so he doesn't respond to you. He may have flu
right.
disease, he doesn't hear very well. But I think I would, you know, I think, yeah, these, if he's got absence epilepsy, it's generally fairly easy to control. It can be a problem because of the frequency of the seizures per day. They usually outgrow with age. It's not a permanent thing, but it's something that, you know, you want to, because these kids can, you know, they do it in school, and people, the other classmates think they're a little weird.
Right.
And, you know, it's just something that if you can stop it. If it's nothing, if he's just a daydreamer, he's a daydreamer. He is doing well in school.
Oh, he's an extraordinarily bright child.
Okay.
and does very well.
Yeah, he may be bright and bored. That's
true.
A possibility, too. But and the teacher hasn't mentioned anything?
No, that she has noticed that he does not focus sometimes as well. And that's an ongoing issue, and we have a real open line of communication, so I find out pretty immediately when things like that are going on. What kind of testing would the pediatrician recommend? What can I anticipate her ordering if she wants to find out more?
If she, you know, if she wants to rule out petit mal epilepsy, absence epilepsy, an EEG, a brainwave test.
Okay.
Which is non-invasive and, yeah, quite comfortable, and it's very effective to rule out absence epilepsy. It doesn't sound, the more you talk about it, it doesn't sound like absence epilepsy, but, it, you know, I think it's worth talking to your pediatrician and seeing,
Okay.
Running it past her.
Our family will do that. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Well, thanks for the call.
All right.
Let's go on here. We have somebody on line number two. This is also a Champagne person. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have an 8-year-old boy who has been through two courses of antibiotics for what I think are boils. He had a third one, and we just decided to let it run its course, and it got really, really horrible, but then cleared up.
Mm-hmm.
And now he has a fourth one. And so there's also smaller ones that never seem to do anything. They go away on their own. But I guess I'm just wondering, with this, do we just deal with it? Is there a different kind of treatment? Because the antibiotics, it clears it up, but then he gets more.
Yeah. I guess what I'm going to say is this too shall pass.
We do
see this where... Okay, we have staph on our skin, you know, it just grows there. And every once in a while, we will get a more virulent staph on our skin.
That's what I was reading about.
And we don't seem to, and it lives there for a while, and then a less virulent form of staph becomes the top dog, and this virulent form tends to disappear.
Okay.
This too shall pass, and it won't continue to be a problem.
So it's not like a symptom of something more serious we should be concerned about, that he has, you know, a resistance to fighting infection or something? Or, I mean, is it something bigger we should worry about? Or
if it's limited to the variable size abscesses on the skin from, you know, pinpoint to, you know, dime size, let's say, there's probably nothing going on.
Because
the people with immunologic problems, number one, he's pretty old to start having troubles. You know, if he had a significant immunologic problem, it probably would have, he'd have had these problems for a lot longer than just the last few weeks or months.
Because it's been a few months. It's been maybe 3 or 4 months since this has started. And so do we just keep dealing with it and it'll eventually go away, do you think?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
That'd be my best guess. Whatever this bug, this germ is, it's probably a staph.
Oh, okay.
We'll be replaced by a friendlier staph.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay.
Thank you. We are down here to maybe a minute or two left. Someone else called really, really quick. I hesitate to say that because then we might not get him in. We could try. I don't know if there's anything in particular that's on your mind you'd like to mention.
You know what? The last two callers have said, I've got a child and he's the joy of my life. And that is just so... Thank you for calling. It's just delightful to hear... And kids should be the joys of our life.
Yeah. You know, one thing that I've been thinking a little bit about lately, and I think perhaps it's having watched some of the Olympics and then seeing some of the profiles of athletes, young elite athletes, where you see how young they are and how much of their life is devoted to their sport and how early in their life that started and everything else they've given up to do that and everything their parents have given up to do that. And it just invites that classic question about why are we doing this? Who are we doing this for? And, it seems that so much of the time you hear the parents say, this is what what they wanted. And, you know, if you have a child that excels in something, you think, well, I want to give them the chance to do that. But I guess I do find myself wondering about...
Get a life.
Is this really healthy? Is it, you know, who's really pushing it? Is the kid pushing it? Is the parent pushing it? What else do you give up because you've put everything into that? I don't know. Yeah, I know these are questions without real...
Yeah. I share the same anxieties that you do. that, yeah, these, there's more to life than downhill skiing or snowboarding or basketball or whatever.
Yeah. But then, so, okay, so what do you have? You have a child who is from the time that they barely could walk, love to ski. That's, they always wanted to be skiing, and they're great at it, and they're just fabulous at it. So you think, well, that's good. That's good. You know, let them do it. And I don't know when you start thinking about the Olympics, but maybe you think, well, you know, this could this person could be very successful. Could, you know, and that's great.
But it still doesn't strike me as usual for a kid to live, sleep, eat, skiing or basketball or, you know, boys are supposed to get interested in girls at some time, and girls are supposed to get interested in boys sometime. And
And that causes a lot of other problems.
But, you know, they're supposed to be interested in friends and other things. And, it just bothers me a little bit.
You need to find a nice girl who skis.
Yes.
And everything will be great. Okay. Well, I guess we'll leave it at that for this time around with our thanks to our guest, Dr. Robert Bocek. He's a pediatrician, clinical assistant professor at U of I. He's here once a month, always on Thursday. We talk about children's health. Thanks.
Thank you.